This is the B&J podcast. Parents, don't let your children listen to this fucking filth. Fucking filth. Fucking filth.
Welcome to the B&J podcast.
I'm B.
I'm J.
I thought it was my turn to go first.
Oh, whatever. We have turns. Anyhow, so the song you just heard was Unwound's All Souls Day. Nice. And if you can tell, it's an old song because we just realized... Not only that, but it's been 20 years since 1994, which was this amazing year in music. And it's, I think it dawned on me when you pointed it out to me when I started reading all the whole Live Through This.
Yeah.
All those retrospectives. And then I wrote up my little piece. And it's just, actually, it's just really daunting because it's. Doesn't feel like that long.
It doesn't. It's weird that it has been 20 years since 1994. And yeah, like going back, because I'd remembered really specifically on that Tuesday going to buy that whole album at Pooba's and getting a bunch of other records that that hadn't come out necessarily the same day, but had come out like within the recent past. So I went back to look at what it could have been and realized like how many records came out that year. Downward Spiral came out that year. Pavement, Slanted and Enchanted. Just a shit ton of stuff.
Yeah, it's just It's so, I've spent the sort of the week or so going back and listening to all that stuff, and it's really, first of all, it's funny how some of the stuff has not aged well. Uh-huh. Like the first Marilyn Manson album has not aged well. But then again, Marilyn Manson has not aged well in and of himself. So
it's weird that you mention that, because that was the only album I ever bought of Marilyn Manson's, and I remember really liking it at the time and feeling like it was so edgy.
Oh no, same here. No, I really liked it. I bought "Smells Like Children" the next year, the sort of remix album, mm-hmm. and then I bought "Antichrist Superstar," and was just like, there was way too much filler in that album.
Well, it's really weird, because someone pointed out at the time of Antichrist Superstar that Marilyn Manson sort of went the opposite way of a lot of rock stars, of getting more and more people angry with him and being afraid of him as some sort of like terrifying presence who will corrupt the children. The sort of tamer and softer that he got.
That's very true. Because he got more commercial between Portrait of an American Family and Antichrist Superstar, that meant more people were listening to him. That meant he was to be feared more, because no one really listened to that first album. Just, you know, like, I got it because I had bought the soundtrack for the movie So Fucking What, and Get Your Gun was on that soundtrack. Mm-hmm. So then one day I was just mindlessly looking through cassettes at Blockbuster Music, and saw that it was there. Looked at the cover, it looked neat, and so I bought that then.
You mentioning So Fucking What reminds me of, like, what a weird year that was for movies, too, that there were a whole bunch of those. Because it was not only the year that Natural Born Killers came out, but also, weirdly, like, you can't call them clones, but they were really similar style, like, violent, sort of young, nihilistic road movies. Love in a 45 came out, I think, that same year.
Didn't Doom, so Doom fucking Generation?
Doom Generation was, I think, either that year or the year after.
Because I remember the dude had the Ministry shirt, and I found that very, very hot at the time.
But, yeah, I mean, just like a really crazy, creative sort of time at the time, and now looking back on it,
The good old days.
I feel old.
Yeah. Get off my lawn. But anyhow, so how was your fortnight?
It was pretty good. On Thursday, I went to see Mogwai. I smartly brought earplugs, which turns out to be a good idea, speaking of getting old.
Oh, Jesus. I saw you posted the picture of just their stacks of amps. And I remember the loudest show I've ever been to was My Bloody Valentine.
Yeah.
And even though I had the earplugs in, it was just a very jarring experience. What was it like that for Mogwai?
What was weird about it is it was loud, but it was also, like, especially the first half of their set was a lot more of their kind of ambient, softer stuff. Like, not that it wasn't still incredibly loud, mm-hmm. but it wasn't raucous. And then the latter half of the show was a little bit more of the edgy Mogwai Fear Satan and all that good stuff.
So it didn't shake your soul.
Well, again, I had my earplugs in the entire time. When I took them out, I can't imagine doing that. I do want to say one other thing about that, which is if you go to a show and you are standing right next to me, please don't start fucking making out with your girlfriend. Like, and not like in a, like, hot and sloppy, I can't keep my hands off of you, because at least that would be like, all right, there's some passion there. But, like, it is, like, long, protracted, like, kiss during one of the songs that, like, lasted, like, almost a minute, and it was just, like, 3 feet away from me and right in the fucking corner of my eye, and I just wanted to grab their heads and smash them together.
Well, did they invite you to partake also?
No.
Well, that's inconsiderate, then.
Well, but also, they were young, and I'm old, but even still, it was like if you're like, at least if you're like feeling someone up, like there's that feeling of like I'm being swept away in the moment. This was like, this felt so fucking twee and obnoxious and just got off. Like, I don't know. I'm a cranky old man who doesn't like public displays of affection, but. Yeah, I hate being around other people, which is one reason I don't go to concerts very much anymore. Because like it gets me in a really foul mood. You know, not only get off my lawn, but like none of you appreciate this on the same level that I do.
The holier than thou.
And not even, and like I know what an asshole that makes me, so it's not like I really deep down feel that way, but at the same, but there's that part of me that I can't escape that's just like, what the fuck are all you people doing here? This is my show for me. And now I, you know, like, so I don't even like to make myself feel like that. I'd rather just stay in my room and listen to music.
Well, what's actually sort of, I guess, novel, I guess, mm-hmm. is now a lot of shows, or a lot of bands, when they perform live, and especially if it's an event that's particularly large, they will have a professional videographers there, and then post it up on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So that's, I mean, I've been able to see Chibo Motto, yeah. You know, Deerhoof, and a couple other bands that way, and not have to leave the sanctuary of my bed covers.
One other good thing about that is that it stops people, and this is the other thing that has become prevalent.
I know what you're going to say. Those people should all be shot.
Seriously, take a fucking photo and then put your goddamn phone down. Yeah. Do not fucking sit there and record an entire song on your goddamn iPhone. Like, fuck you. What is wrong with you?
I hope they all get syphilis in their balls and clitoris's eye falls off. Like, seriously.
So that was my most recent adventure. What did you do? Did you do anything this week?
So I had an aunt in town last weekend, mm-hmm. so it gave me an opportunity to sort of take time off from having to be around my grandmother, which, trust me, sometimes I need to strangle that bitch. But anyhow, so I was thinking, you know, I had a chance to go away and do, okay, this just shows how boring I've become now. I had an opportunity to do a hike not around San Pedro or Palos Verdes. So I started thinking, okay, I'll do the Beechwood Canyon hike in Griffith Park. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, oh, that damn mountain lion's there. But he's all sick now. And
yeah.
And that made me sad. And so one of my biggest fears, like, if the mountain lion or cougar or puma, because I guess we can call him that,
I feel
it's
like
all interchangeable.
I feel like cougar is either is more of a southern thing, and then puma is more like a northwestern thing. Like, I feel like it's more of a regional thing, and they're all the same word for the same thing. Yeah. But like
big fucking cat that can kill you.
Yeah. Well, and growing up, like, I never heard them called anything but mountain lions. It took me forever before I realized a cougar and a puma and a mountain lion were all the same fucking cat.
And I suppose if a mountain lion were to come up to, if P-22, as he is called, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, how imaginative, you fucking scientist. So if he comes up to me during the day, I guess it's not too scary because he's not going to attack. I don't know what to do in that, I would just paralyze.
It's interesting because, like, I feel like there's this vision of L.A. as being this sort of, like, sort of a lot like New York, where it's just, it's very urban, and there's not a whole lot of wildlife. But, yeah, there's mountain lions, there's coyotes all over the fucking place.
Yeah.
There was actually a great joke on Sunday's Mad Men, where his wife is living out in L.A. trying to pursue her TV career, and she's got a place in the canyon, and all you can hear all night long are coyotes howling. And he's really put off by it because he's coming from New York and doesn't know how to deal with that. Anyway.
So I start thinking, okay, like, what do I do? Like, I mean, obviously, P-22 should live. Like, it's good that he's there. But I don't know what their mating season is, because I know cats get more aggressive during mating season. So,
do you have a strategy? If you encounter a mountain lion, do you have a pack plan?
I don't. So that's why I just went the safe route and stayed in PV. Because I know there are no mountain lions there, and the worst thing I'd have to deal with is a snake. And snakes I can sort of deal with, you just stay the fuck away.
Yeah.
And, so that, yeah, so I just got really spooked for some reason. And I don't know if it's rational or not, but, you know, I just, better safe than sorry for me, because Lord knows, my ass would be eaten up in a second.
But probably not by P22, since it's pretty
sick. He's a little sick, yeah.
Is it mange and, like, something horrible, right? Like,
the food he's eaten, like, the animals he's eaten have been infected with rat poison.
Oh, that's what it was, yeah.
And it's just so sad. And just seeing that picture of him looking, like, very discolored and just very sick the other day was, I don't know, that was
it was sad. Super depressing, yeah. Anyway, that was kind of a bummer to go on. Anything else?
Oh, and I do have a complaint, so, and it's...
It's not directed at me.
No, it's not directed at you. Okay. But it's alarming nonetheless. So on these, going on these trails, and if you go to Portuguese Bend, that's a very popular trail down there, because it's fairly easy. But you see people now with these jaw boxes, you know, the Bluetooth speaker, portable speakers. Yes. Like, I thought it was cute 3 or 4 years ago when I saw a group of gay kids do this to, like, this really trashy, you know, queer disco nonsense. And I'm like, oh, that's cute, you know, because it was the first time I encountered it. Now, every motherfucking person has one of these, and now I have to listen to their really shitty music. Because, I have my earphones in, mm-hmm. and I keep it low so I can sort of hear, let's say, if a rattlesnake starts, you know, rattling, you know?
Yeah.
I'd like to know that. So I'm just really put off by now.
Speaking of which, let's back up a second though, because you said queer disco, and
not like cool queer disco. I'm like Cher and Christina Aguilera.
No. But queer disco made me think and realize that, because you posted the thing about Michael Alec getting out of
Yes. I don't know how I feel about that.
I feel like,
I mean, did he do his proper amount of time? Because he motherfucking killed.
It was almost 20 years.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was his sentence. I get that, but I don't know how I feel about it.
It's kind of hard to figure out exactly how you feel about it, because it was pretty horrendous, but he was also pretty fucked up on drugs.
Yeah.
And so was everyone. Like, look, I'm not saying you should murder people and then dismember their corpses and, you know, throw it in the river.
Yeah.
I'm not pro that. But at the same time, it has been like 20 years. They were fucking doing a lot of really heavy, really fucking paranoia-inducing drugs.
And what they showed in that movie, Party Monster, was just the tip of the iceberg, people.
So when that came up, because I was discussing with my girlfriend, and one of my favorite things, in fact, my favorite thing about that movie, it's a great movie, too, and Marilyn Manson has a cameo in it, the best thing in that movie is the way they drop, like, what he actually did, because it seems like it's way less at first, and then the giant talking rat comes out,
yes.
and it's like, oh, by the way, this is what actually happened.
Actually, my favorite part of the movie mm-hmm. was when James St. James...
Oh, and Seth Green is Seth Green's amazing.
Amazing. Gets mad at Michael, comes back to the apartment, and finds Michael all fucked up and whatnot. And so then they start dancing to Stacey Q's Two of Hearts.
Yeah.
That's, I think, the, I don't...
The movie is great.
It's a wonderful, wonderful movie.
And, like, anyone who talks shit about Culkin should really see it, because it's a great performance on his part, too. He's really good.
He's really good. And Natasha Lyonne, actually.
Yeah, she's great.
When I first saw her in it, I didn't realize that was her. So that was interesting. Anyway,
yeah. So sorry. So that was my queer disco tangent.
Queer disco, yeah.
So last weekend, before like the onslaught of TV, Mad Men's back, which I watch, and I don't think you do.
No, I do not.
Game of Thrones and Mad Men and Hannibal are the ones that I can't get you to watch with me.
Sorry.
But before that, I rented one movie on Amazon, which is the new Errol Morris documentary on Rumsfeld.
I cannot wait to see that.
So it's available on Amazon streaming. It's pretty great. I liked Fog of War a little bit better because McNamara, for all his faults, seems actually interested in self-reflection, and watching Rumsfeld reminds you of exactly what Rumsfeld was like, which is just completely blithely ignoring any kind of criticism or analysis that doesn't meet his worldview.
Well, Errol Morris was on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me last week, and it was really funny because he was talking about the differences between McNamara and Rumsfeld. He said at the end of the Fog of War, he liked McNamara. He thought he was a decent person inside.
Yeah.
Despite what he had done. And then when asked to comment about Rumsfeld, he was not dismissive, but very curt about his feelings toward Rumsfeld. And it's
very clear in the movie too what the difference is. I mean, like he asked McNamara a lot of questions in Fog of War, and McNamara responds as best he can, and their sort of conversation, which at that point especially was very different for an Errol Morris film. Most of his interviews before that, his films usually involve a lot of interviewing, but most of his questioning, and especially in Mr. Death, I think he only has one on-screen question, and the rest of it is all the subjects talking about themselves. But there was a lot more in Fog of War, and then there was a lot more in this. The best moment, which I'll ruin for everyone, is he asks him about the torture memos. And Rumsfeld, sort of shines him on a little bit about, well, a lot of people think that this was going on in the military and it was really more of a CIA thing, blah, 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 blah. And Morris follows up again and says, well, but what did you think about them? And he says, oh, well, I never read them. And Morris just goes, really? In exactly that voice. Which kind of sums it up. I mean, that both Bush and Rumsfeld, Rumsfeld because of the documentary and Bush because of his painting show, have been in the news again a little bit lately. And it just reminds me of, there are a lot of things I really dislike about Obama. I mean, I think that he has a lot of really shitty policies. I think that we've become a lot more
covert.
Well, and a lot more accepting of a surveillance state than we were, even during the Bush administration.
Oh, by far.
That said, I think the Bush administration, A, set us up for it, and B, those guys were fucking criminals. Really, really just a terrifying group of guys. And Rumsfeld and Cheney are at the top of that trapezoid of evil.
Correct.
Anyway.
Yeah, but so, I'm just saying this Obama administration, not any better. And it was funny because when he was first elected, I was in an election day party and people were rejoicing. And I was happy, because, it wasn't McCain. So I'm like, okay, fine. And then I started asking people, but what are you expecting? Like, you have all this hope. Why? I said, nothing's going to change. It's probably going to get worse. Everyone said, oh, no, no, no. Obama's going to get rid of Guantanamo. Oh, it's going to be a more open presidency. I want to hear those people talk to me now.
I think there's a lot of, honestly, I think there's a lot of people that don't realize how bad that aspect of it is. Because there, if you want to give Obama some credit, there are a couple of things. One is the overall military drawdown in both Afghanistan and Iraq.
I won't call it a drawdown.
Mm-hmm.
I'd call it a redirection. Because all the military stuff is going into other jurisdictions, not the overt Army, Marines, Navy, you know?
So I was very, very specific about what I said. Like,
exactly.
In terms of personnel and large troop numbers.
But people people need to realize it's happening. And I mean, we're bombing Yemen almost every day now. We never went to war against Yemen.
Yep. I mean, the drones thing really bothers me. And, you know, for all the shit that we give the Bush administration about their lack of transparency, you know, just sort of general being shitty about things, the Obama administration is worse on transparency and significantly worse in terms of going after whistleblowers. They have the worst record in history of going after wrongdoers and whistleblowers. Snowden is only the latest in a long line of people that they've gone after for trying to essentially, I mean, and you know, like, Snowden's not the best example because what he did is potentially illegal. Probably illegal, and there's no kind of protection for it. But at the same time, you know, it was, I feel like, done from a point of view, you know, from a place of really trying to reform things. And they have made no effort to do any kind of reform.
In an effort to sort of wrap this up,
sorry,
because we can go on for hours. We can go on for long enough. I'll just say this. The Bush administration never sent a drone to kill an American citizen overseas.
Yeah.
Obama has done that. Deportations from America has gone up during Obama's administration. So let's before we start saying that all Republicans are evil, and sure, some of their policies are really stupid, let's just get a grasp of what the Democrats have done. And by saying that, we're going to get to Jawbox, another gem from 1994, from their second single off of For Your Special Sweetheart, this is Cooling Card. sorry. Oh, well, what's our cocktail? What's our podcast brought to us by today?
The podcast today is brought to us by Sazerac cocktail, which is a little bit of absinthe, usually just enough to sort of coat the glass. Sorry, that was dog noise. enough to coat the glass. A little bit of rye that, in this case, it's bullet rye, pilfered from my roommate, who doesn't listen to this podcast, so woohoo. And a little bit of Peshad's bitters. normally it has a citrus skin in it as well, but I didn't have any, so...
It's a New Orleans cocktail.
It is. It's the official cocktail of New Orleans.
It is. And I figure as someone who spent considerable time, 7 years, in Louisiana, granted, from 1 to 8 years old, but I feel I should be doing this podcast entirely in a Louisiana drawl. Mm. But that's just way too much effort. So I'm not going to do that. So one of the news, one thing's making the news this week is the, which group is this? The
AHF.
AIDS Healthcare Foundation, the LA AIDS Healthcare Foundation. And that sounds good and nice, you know, they want to make sure, you know, to try and prevent AIDS and HIV. And
well.
That's in theory. Of course, but we all know about things in theory, like communism. And to help deal with people who suffer from AIDS and HIV and prevention and whatnot.
So so a lot of their treatment stuff is actually pretty good. Mm-hmm. They do a lot of outreach work in communities, especially the gay community. In terms of offering affordable, antiretroviral cocktails, just sort of generally helping people who are afflicted.
So their director, their head guy,
Michael Weinstein.
Weinstein, yes, he's a Weinstein,
not a Steen.
Steen, maybe. I don't know. One of the big drugs in the gay community is this thing called Truvada, which is aimed as sort of...
It's a prophylactic.
It's a prophylactic, yeah. It's not completely fail-safe. I think it's only 90% effective in preventing new HIV...
Infections
via... by unprotected sex.
Right.
In other words, it's sort of a vaccine.
Sort of.
Like I said, it's not fail-safe, so I'm not calling it a vaccine. It's sort of a vaccine.
Like condoms have a 98% efficacy rate when used properly, which means that even condoms are not 100%. Very few things in this world are 100% effective. But it has a high efficacy rate for, if you're taking it before you have, risky sex and you take it, I mean, I think they actually prescribe it to people who are, I'm going to go back to my SVU thing here. On SVU, they use it as anytime that any of the officers are exposed potentially to HIV, they take it as sort of a thing that can potentially block it from nesting and infecting.
So Weinstein, in an AP news interview, dismissed Truvada as a party drug. Which has many implications in and of itself, but and particularly saying that people who like sex like to party.
Well,
and we shouldn't care about them. That's the implication I got.
That's the implication that it is. It's a very very puritanical. Sort of, like any risk is unacceptable risk point of view, which totally stacks up with the historic AHF standpoint.
And it's very much like when the birth control pill first came out. you know, oh no, this is going to mean everyone's going to have, you know, sex on the streets. And once the birth control pill got out, I don't think that happened much, did it?
It's less that and more that birth rates did decline somewhat. Abortion rates also significantly declined. And it's tricky because there's a lot of issues surrounding sex and safe sex and, you know, like, and especially in the gay community. You know, there's a horrific meningitis outbreak in, recently. So it's not just HIV, but we're pretty much going to stick to HIV in this case because that's supposedly AIDS Healthcare Foundation's goal, is to prevent people from getting infected with HIV.
I've been watching some documentaries, not because of this, but in recent months. You know, I watched
How to Survive a Plague.
How to Survive a Plague, and I also watched We Were Here, which documented five people's journeys through.
That's
AIDS,
an older
during
movie,
the
right?
80s. Yeah, it's a little older.
I remember seeing that movie and it being really affecting.
Like, I cried many times at that movie.
Yeah.
But one of the things they said, one of the sentiments at the beginning of the plague happened, was we want to find something where we can have sex and not get sick.
Mm-hmm.
And so if this is what Truvada is being, or, you know, maybe it's the first step to getting to that point, why are they condemning it?
Well, so I'm actually kind of curious about this from an outsider's point of view, because I work for a company that is involved in the adult industry. And the adult industry, especially the hetero adult industry, really doesn't like the AHF. And we'll get into that in a second, but like for you personally, and just like around the gay campfire, is there any of that like feeling and sentiment about the AHF before this came out? Like,
I'm so separated from most of the gay.
Yeah, I know. I'm not saying like as the gay guy.
I know. I know in the gay community with Truvada, it's very, very split.
Uh
huh. Where Truvada is seen along with meth as being for those people only, for the people who just want to be wild and irresponsible, you know. And then you have the respectable gays, the quote-unquote respectable gays, who, you know, want to get married, who want that picket fence with the children and the dog and, you know, all of that stuff, you know, and, you know, play Susie Homemaker and whatnot.
Go ahead.
No, and so it got me, reading that story about the AHF, you know, it just got me thinking, and then reading this, Nina Hartley wrote a piece, and a lot of it was written around the time when the voters of LA County voted for Prop B.
This was, the post that she made on FetLife, which got, which they got permission to reprint elsewhere, but was late last year when, after another outbreak scare, which happens from time to time, and she's very clear in the story about it usually coming from
outside,
personal things, which doesn't mean that it doesn't affect the pool of porn talent, but so I think it was October of last year when she posted that, and I remember reading it at the time and being really blown away by like how well reasoned it was. There's some stuff in it that is sort of problematic, but specifically the stuff dealing with AHF and the fact that they oppose pretty much anything that doesn't involve condoms and also sell condoms.
Yes.
Which is really fucked up, in my opinion. Like,
I believe, what was it? Let's see. So, a company, I forget what it was, but they spent $5 million. Oh, here it is.
Oh, it was Pfizer, wasn't it? It's Pfizer on Viagra.
It was Pfizer with Viagra. AHF wanted $5 million to consult, to be a consultant
to Pfizer.
What was it? Let's see. When Pfizer first introduced Viagra, AHF, quote, offered to consult with the company so that Viagra users would be properly advised of the risks of unprotected sex with this new product. They wanted $5 million, so Pfizer sued. Pfizer declined. They said, no, we won't do that. Mm-hmm. So AHF sued them for $50 million, saying that they were being unsafe.
Yeah.
Unsafe marketing practices. So Pfizer caved. So the $5 million, basically, what they got from the $5 million was, at the end of the commercials, the little tiny disclaimers that you see, it said that
Viagra doesn't protect from HIV and other STDs. Yes. Yeah,
that was $5 million. No, and so Prop B here in LA County requires mandates condoms on porn sets, both straight and gay, which I remember at the time I was 100% opposed to it.
Yeah.
Because that's not porn's function.
Not only is that not porn's function, but if it is going to be, if you're going to try and reflect a sort of a variety of lifestyle choices, the idea is that you should let the studios that are marketing their product directly to it do that. And there are, especially Vivid in the straight community is the condom porn company for heteros, if memory serves. And for gays, it's Titan. Titan are known sort of derisively as the condom Nazis.
Yes.
Because all of their Titan Men exclusive contract stars only do Titan films, and all Titan films feature condom penetrative sex. Not that doesn't go for blowjobs, and it doesn't go for other things, but it's fairly safe. And you know, like for my company has worked with Titan. We did a themed movie. They shot it in the office during office hours, which was interesting. you know, like having seen a little bit behind the curtain on that, like, I respect the shit out of that company. You know, they do things. They're very, very by the book. They're very interested in the safety of their stars. They're very interested in their community. And, you know, they're not saying everyone needs to wear condoms. They're just saying everyone in our movies needs to wear condoms because that's the behavior that we want to reflect, and that's what we want to do. And that's great. Forcing everyone to wear condoms, A, is stupid. Tricking everyone into believing that there is this, like, this huge lurking beast that slumbers, and the only way to keep it quiet is to appease it by making everyone wear condoms is fucking stupid. And they keep wanting to expand it to the rest of California. A lot of porn has already gone to Ventura County, yes, to Las Vegas, to other places, because you can't shoot in LA County without the fear of AHF people and OSHA inspections. The campaign that they ran to promote Measure B was incredibly dirty. There was a great billboard on the west side of town that was just this huge thing right near the 405 that said, like, pornographers love to vote no on Measure B. And it's just the worst kind of salacious, like, sex shaming bullshit things. And a lot of people in the porn industry, especially, really, really dislike it because this, for the same reason that they dislike any kind of intervention in their personal lives. Like, this is, you know, like, look, this is your business. Like, you don't want someone else, like, elbowing their way in to try and tell you how to do your fucking job.
Exactly. It's not like porn people are going up to Michael Weinstein or whatever, telling him how to be a major fucking dickhead. Mm-hmm. You know, he does that on his own. Just leave porn alone. And so it gets, why, I don't understand why there's so much negative, just, there's so much anti-sex. There's so so much attacks on sex. Like, I just don't get it. And I don't get why some feminists are anti-sex, you know, or anti-porn, or anti-trans, or anti-sex workers. I don't get why the gay community is trying to clamor for all this acceptance from heterosexuals when they would much rather see us in our graves. I mean, I don't get it.
Well, and it's not, I mean, like, to me, the line has never been between gay and straight or any of those other things. It's between people who are restrictive and people who are permissive. Like, you don't have to necessarily like or engage in a behavior to think that it is a good thing that that behavior exists. For example, from a personal standpoint, I don't need to go with you to Damon's Steakhouse and eat a steak to think that it is a good thing that people can go to a steakhouse and eat a steak.
Correct.
Like, the greatness of living in a fucking open society is that you can deal with people's things that you don't necessarily do in your own life and go, okay, well, like, I appreciate that you do things differently than I do. And the reciprocity there is that when you see something that I'm doing that you don't necessarily do, you don't go, no, you can't do that. You go, well, all right, cool. Good for you.
Yeah.
And that goes for sex, like, in every fucking form. Like, any consensual sex, you know, between two people who are capable of consenting should not be under any kind of restriction, you know, from outside parties. That's fucking stupid.
It baffles my mind why people are so caught up with what other people do in sex. You know, if you like being pissed on, that's fine, you know? If you like being fisted, fine. If you like just plain old vanilla sex, that's fine, you know? I don't get why there's such a hang-up on all of these things.
That being said, I kind of enjoy a little bit of a hang-up because that makes it a little bit more exciting, but...
That's true. That's, you know, well, yeah, let's be honest about that.
Well, and we had this... What's interesting is that we had this conversation on LiveJournal back when... God, what company was it? Raging Stallion that had said they were going to do all condom and then went back on it? One of those gay porn companies, and you had posted about it, and I said, well, you know, like maybe that's kind of a thing, like in, you know, like in porn, one of the things about that makes it exciting sometimes is that it's transgressive, so you get some fantasy transgression, and porn, by the way, should always be about fantasy transgression for the most part.
Like
porn behavior is not real behavior. If you're trying to emulate porn, you are doing sex wrong, and you should stop.
Because it's impossible.
Right. And also, I probably know more about gay porn than most straight men. I've probably seen a lot more gay porn than most straight men. I will say this. There is some fucking violent, scary gay porn that is super awesome because it is violent and scary. Like, there are a lot of gay... there's a lot of gay porn, and a lot more than straight porn, I think. Or at least a lot more than mainstream straight porn. That involves, like... you know, like forcing people to blow you, gunplay. Maybe this is just the porn that I've been exposed to, but there's definitely
I just saw one last night that I really got off really well to. But no, it was some guy swimming in a river. Boat comes by, picks him up. Forces him, it's two guys, gets forced to being taken at both ends, eventually gets fisted, and then thrown back overboard. You know, it was a really hot scene, you know?
Right, and like, and again, like, look, that doesn't mean that Jimmy's going out boating this weekend and fucking gonna pick up some straight boy in the river and rape him. Like, it's just fantasy. We all get that.
Yes.
Like, if you watch a porn and that makes you go out and rape someone, that is not because the porn made you go out and rape someone. That is because you were a fucking sick motherfucker and you saw something and tried to emulate it. Like, and the problem is with you, not with the media. Anyway.
Exactly. I mean, it's... So, I just find all... I find sex shaming, slut shaming, just to be very despicable, because And the slut shaming I find to be especially despicable because the people who do the slut shaming are usually the men who have all the sex, who think sex is just catered towards them and women just are meant to just be sexual objects, which I find to be a very detestable point of view. And that when a woman finally decides she enjoys sex and will have engage in casual sex, that just disturbs their complete worldview.
Yeah.
And so we have to call him a slut, like Bell Knox.
I mean, that...
That was a groan, by the way, by Brendan.
Well, because the whole Bell Knox thing... I mean, the whole reaction to the Bell Knox thing bugs the shit out of me.
Well, it's Duke. I mean, what the fuck do you expect? I mean, they're so fucking sex backwards over there. I mean... It's just ridiculous in that little tiny.
The worst thing about that is you said like they're so sex backwards, and the first joke that got to mind is they're so sex backwards that they actually got a fake rape case. Because like, so this is a tiny bit off topic, but like the thing that bugs the shit out of me is when people bring up like in any kind of in whenever there's an allegation of sexual assault, like someone bringing up like, well, you know, people lie about being raped sometimes. And yeah, that's true. But it's such a fucking tiny portion of the time that you can't use that as a rubric. I mean, that's like, I don't even know what is close to saying that. That's like saying that, well, yeah, sometimes on a sunny day, it'll start raining 15 minutes later. Like, yeah, it happens, but, you know, it's not the majority of the time. So basing your opinion on that tiny, tiny, like, unlikely event is not a good idea. If you're not on a jury, the rule of innocent until proven guilty doesn't really apply, by the way. Like, you can totally think someone is guilty of something if they haven't been convicted. Like, look at OJ. No one really thinks OJ's innocent. Maybe there's, like, 5 people who think OJ's innocent. They're dumb.
So, for me, sex is sex.
Uh-huh.
If you love having sex, have tons of sex.
Yes.
You know? If you like doing it bare, fine. Just be able to deal with the consequences, you know? If you don't like having sex, don't have sex. But don't tell me not to have sex, you know? Just don't have sex.
Well, and specifically, don't tell other people not to have sex, and don't fucking make your policy based on... You know, based on other people behaving the way that you want them to behave. Like, basically, like, it would be like if I became the head of a major organization that wasn't PETA, because fuck PETA. But, like, let's say I became the president of the United States and I came out and said, like, I think that everyone should be a vegan, so you all have to be vegans. Like, that's bullshit.
Yeah, I'd assassinate you.
Yeah. Because... Look, my lifestyle choices are my lifestyle choices, and I might be willing to explain to you why. I won't, because I'm not annoying like that. But I'm not going to force you to fucking do what I want, what the things the way that I think that they should be done, because that's fascism.
Oh, you're a much better person than I am. Because if I ever become president, all straight people go into camps.
Are they, like, re-education camps, or...?
Sure. Let's call them that.
By re-education camps, you mean, like, they're picking up people off the side of the boat and two-waying them, right?
Haven't thought of that.
This went to a weird place. I think we should probably end the segment.
Yes, so... I guess if people all want to fuck the same... Here's a song about that. This is Hold, Rockstar.
When I went to school... Oh... Well, I went to school. Well, I went to school in Olympia. And everyone's the same. What do you do with a revolution? We look the same.
Fuck the same. That was Hole with a rock star.
I think that's both of our favorite songs on that album, which is a great album all the way through.
But
that song especially, like, there's something really, really charming about it.
The giggle.
Yeah, at the beginning. It's the stutter stop at the beginning of the song is just really adorable. By the way, just for a second off topic, the other thing that I watched this weekend, just sort of accidentally, it showed up on Hulu Plus, was The People vs. Larry Flint, which I started because I was like, oh yeah, I'll watch that until my girlfriend gets home from work or whatever. And I had totally forgotten that Courtney Love is in the movie until she showed up in the movie. I'm like, oh yeah.
And she was pretty good.
She's great in the movie. That whole movie is fantastic.
Oh yes.
And if you have Hulu, watch it because it's endlessly entertaining. It's not my favorite of those two writers' movies. That would be still be Ed Wood. But their gift for making great biopics is unparalleled. So, and Milos Forman is in top form in terms of directing. Harrelson is fucking great. His brother, who plays Larry Flint's brother, is also great.
And Larry Flint was great in that movie.
As the judge?
As the judge. All 5 seconds he was in it.
Harrelson, I mean, I know I've said this before on this podcast, but Harrelson is a national treasure and needs to be in way more stuff.
And he was really fucking hot in Natural Born Killers, let's admit it. Well, I did.
20 years ago.
Oh, God. Just dig that knife right in.
All right.
So anyhow, so this week presented us with two wonderful stories about Yasiel Puig on his escape from Cuba. The first one on Los Angeles Magazine, which it was very well written.
Which is unusual for Los Angeles Magazine. Let's put that right out there. I mean, there are some good writers who work for Los Angeles Magazine, but usually their centerpieces are not very well written.
No. And it did a good job of showing just how backwards the policy, well, first of the whole embargo in and of itself, and then B, to get a Cuban player who defects into baseball. And just all the Byzantine rules that surround baseball, like if you're on U.S. Puerto Rico or Canadian soil, you have to go through the amateur draft, you know, which is something like the whole reserve system back before free agency was granted back in the 60s.
Do you remember who the player? What the name of the player was who started free agency?
Kurt Flood.
That I was trying to remember his name because he's a really important player.
He should be him and the lawyer, the head of the First Baseball Union, Marvin Morris. Shit, I got his name wrong. Anyhow, the drinks were strong. should be in the Hall of Fame. Anyhow, So, but if you're a foreign player, if you're like you're in Mexico, you're in the Dominican, or from Haiti, you can be a free agent. Mm-hmm. So you go to the so you can accept bids from anyone.
But not if you're in Cuba.
No, and if you're in Cuba, you're just fucked. So that's why you have to escape. So,
it's a fantastic piece, by the way, if you haven't read it and you're Jesse interested Katz. At all in Cuba or baseball or Puig, you should totally read it because it paints a great picture of a lot of it.
And it's hard to go away from that piece and not have a little more empathy for Puig. And because he's been, ever since he got to the major leagues, he's been such a lightning bolt of criticism, you know? Oh, you know, he sort of hustles when he wants to. Oh, he's just a showboater. Oh, he's always late. Oh, he speeds all the time.
Oh, what was my favorite? Oh, that's not how we play baseball here in the big leagues. I don't know where that kind of baseball is played.
Oh, yeah, Carlos Beltran.
Fucking Beltran.
Yeah. I don't know if he said or that fucking mole did. No, and so, and I've always defended Puig, because even though he's really standoffish to the media, just having dealt with it personally last year, he doesn't like talking to the media, he doesn't trust the media, and I mean, if you're coming from Cuba...
Surprise.
Why would you?
Well, and especially, why would you trust the English language media when your English is not particularly good?
Exactly. But nonetheless...
And there was the thing... Sorry. Where his sort of handler slash best friend slash, you know, like guy who was introducing him.
Oh, yeah, Tim Bravo.
Yeah. Had to, like, sort of departed early mid-season, right?
Exactly, because of allegations that he was passing him phone numbers from female fans right near the dugout. Which, okay, it's... Tim Bravo, like, I didn't think he was a good translator, mm-hmm. because that's not why he was hired. Like, I thought he was a shit translator.
Right.
But for what he had to do for Puig to sort of introduce him to American culture, you know, teach him how to drive. Like, the dude didn't know how to drive, so, I mean, so if he's going 100 miles an hour down the highway, you sort of get why, because he just picked up driving a year ago.
But also, I mean, like, look, I'll say the same thing that I said during the first two seasons of Lost. Hire the fucker a driver. Like, just don't let him behind the wheel. Don't let Matt Camp, and definitely don't let James Loney behind the wheel.
No, and so, anyhow, so what comes out of this profile is just intriguing, because you have Los Zetas involved in the whole trafficking portion of Puig, keeping him hostage,
threatening to cut off his fucking arm,
you know, because the people,
or a finger, I guess, but still.
The finger, you know, body, assorted body parts, you know, because the people who sort of sponsored Puig to flee from Cuba wouldn't pay up, because it's just, it's an incredible...
Yeah, it's really long and a little bit complicated, but
it's sketchy also.
Yeah.
Because it's a former friend basically accusing him of, A, being a repeated...
snitch.
Informant. Yeah, snitch. A ratón in Cuba, you know, getting people, you know, imprisoned and tortured and whatnot for trying to help him escape. It's just fascinating. I mean,
amazing piece.
And you look at him, he's a hulking specimen of a man, you know, he's
6 foot.
He's a little taller than me by an inch.
Yeah, he's like 6 foot four. He's
6'3"-ish.
Yeah.
You know, just very built.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, yeah. He's a big, big dude. Like, he could play football easily.
Oh, definitely. And so, and to think that he had to go through what he went through, that just months before, or just days before he signed, you know, for that 7-year, $42 million deal from the Dodgers, mm-hmm. he was trying to escape a hotel off the coast of Cancun. You know, it's so... fascinating.
And there's this, like, there is this really weird streak of, you know, what's wrong with that guy? Like, even some of my friends who are just like, God, he seems like such an asshole. Like, and it's like, you know, it's like, it's a completely different culture. B, like, that fucker had to go through some shit in order to get here. Like, yeah, he has $42 million now, or less 20% that he has to pay to the Cuban, or to the Miami guy who got him out. But,
no, but
still,
it's a one of the rare, Jesse Katz, who wrote this piece, got one of the rare sit-downs with Puig talking about, you know, not directly his escape, but just, you know, the whole transition. He says, just loosely, sleep is when it's your turn to die. That he always sleeps with one eye open. Because, I mean, there is that fear of retaliation that he has, you know, for whatever money's unpaid or what it took for him to be where he is now. He is a bit paranoid, justifiably so. Now, where the paranoia should end is what Bill Plaschke, bless his heart, Bill Plaschke in the LA Times, after this was released,
in a much shorter piece, by the way,
asked the question, well, what about Dodger Stadium?
The question that no one was asking. Like, well, like, and not only ask the question, but ask the exact same question multiple times about different things. Like, could Los Etes come, and could this eventually lead back to Dodger Stadium? Could this crazy Miami businessman come, and could this eventually lead back to Dodger Stadium? Are the Dodgers doing everything they can to keep him safe in the outfield? Like, it's just like the weirdest, most paranoid-sounding article you've ever read.
I mean, and it's fine to ask that question, because, yes, I did ask that question briefly, saying, oh, could Los Etes come to Dodger Stadium and, let's say, you know, not only kill Puig, but, you know, kill Adrian Gonzalez, you know, or get a fan. And right away, I said, no, that's not going to happen.
In fairness, Adrian Gonzalez would probably get hit because he's a really slow runner, but
no comment.
The other thing I want to bring up, speaking of Puig, is like, because it's been a Puig heavy week. Like, not only have these articles come out, and then there was the ESPN piece that you read that I didn't even bother with.
The ESPN, the magazine, the writer Scott Eden wrote a longer piece, and it does a better job of detailing what the actual escape. Like, it details through affidavits.
Interesting.
No, and it's a very, that part of it was interesting. It was a really
poorly written.
And I'll just say this. I'll just read this little excerpt from it. One of the boxer who also. The boxer who also escaped with Puig, what's his name, Despain. Here's a little excerpt from it. It was around that, eventually the boxer prevailed in persuading Puig to leave. But within a year of arriving in Miami, Despain had only received $70,000, less than half the money Pacheco had promised him, and no house. It was around that time that a frustrated Despain became aware, through local news coverage, of the lawsuit against Puig. He sensed an opportunity. Of his decision to approach Gonzalez, the lawyer he hired to sort of file this really really weird lawsuit involving torture in a foreign land. He says, at first I was going to leave this alone, but promises were made to me. He'd also begun to receive death threats, including one at gunpoint in Hialeah. The problem with this piece, it doesn't say from whom he received the death threat and why he would be receiving this death threat. I mean, and,
well, that's,
and it goes to my, this whole clamoring for long form online. My problem, this piece shows one of my problems with it. It's making a piece long form for the sake of being long form, not for the sake of anything written well.
Or, you know, like, or with something to say.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think, like, it's interesting because not only from a, not only from a storytelling point of view, but also in terms of, on the marketing side of things, there's been a real push towards, well, you want longer and longer content because people tend to share that more. I don't think they tend to read it more, but I think that they
don't.
I think they tend to share it more. And on my objection to it specifically is that one of the things I like about internet writing is that it gives a lot of people a voice. Like, it gives, it is absolutely democratic. Anyone can have a blog. Anyone can write anything they want. What separates the amateurs from the professionals is not even necessarily a specific degree of talent in terms of the writing. It's editing.
Yes.
And editing has gone really downhill in the last few years, especially online.
And this ESPN the Magazine piece just proved that. Now, getting back to Puig.
Because I can go on forever about how bad editing is.
And, oh, we both can.
Well, and but before we go back, I do want to say one thing, which I mentioned in on Twitter earlier this week, too, which is that the one thing you can do right away, all editors and writers forever, end your fucking pieces. Like, do not have a paragraph that just trails off into nothing. If your piece is more than two paragraphs long, you need to have a conclusion. You need to end things. You need to close that door. It's not fucking TV where you want to end on a cliffhanger. Like, just fucking have a conclusion. Sorry.
I was, in AP English, I was taught, your first paragraph is what the hell you're going to talk about. Mm-hmm. And I was always told, make it one sentence.
Yeah.
Your next three paragraphs support your first paragraph, and your last paragraph rephrases the first paragraph.
Right.
That's it.
Like, this is what I'm going to say. Say it. This is what I said.
Yes.
And I mean, it's not like, it doesn't break down exactly like that, but like, Jesus Christ, like, I can't tell you how many pieces I've got to the end of and scrolled down through the ads thinking that there had to be something else after that and going, what the fuck is wrong with you? Just write an ending sentence. What that means will remain to be seen. Period. That's all it is. Like you just have to provide a closed door for me that I feel like I have concluded things. Otherwise, it's like fucking and like getting right up to the point and then someone rolling over and going to sleep.
Yeah, it's blue balling.
Exactly. Sorry, so back to Puig.
So back to Puig, and back to Plashke. And I like Plashke. He's a very nice person.
He's totally crazy.
And that he is. So, I remember several years back, it was Mormon Day at Dodger Stadium, and one of the Mormon elders was standing in front of the Dodger dugout right before the game. He collapsed, had a heart attack, and died. Tragic. Yes. I mean, as much as you want to make fun of Mormons, you never want to see someone die. And he died right on the spot, too. Like, there were ambulances immediately came, emergency personnel. He couldn't be resuscitated. So me, Plashke, and Dylan Hernandez of the Times, we were down on the field, and we're right at the where they cordoned off so the emergency workers could deal with the emergency on hand. We're standing there, and we're just looking at the scene, you know, and it was very, very somber. And Plashke just gives out a sigh, makes you think. Both me and Dylan just sort of look at him and go, what? You know, life is just so fleeting. I just look at him like, now is not the time to be an existential twit, you know? It's just, you know, it's really sad. What happened? Report it, you know? You have to report what's happening. Makes you think. And that's the sort of person Plashke is, you know. He's always looking for some deeper inherent universal truth of things, which doesn't necessarily exist, and that shows in his writing.
Yes. Dylan Hernandez, by the way, an amazing, also amazing sports writer.
So, another funny story. Last night, there was a reported gun-wielding, you know, assailant in the LA Times building.
Uh-huh.
I hadn't seen Dylan Hernandez tweet at the Dodger game last night, so my first instinct was, uh-oh, Dylan's gone and shot up everyone at the Times building.
But he didn't.
No, he didn't. And he's probably, as pessimistic as I am, I think he's even worse. He is one of the moodiest, just bitchiest people around, and it's great. He's a larf.
So back to Puig for one.
Sorry.
For one second. No. But, like, away from the writing and back to Puig, because the other thing that we have to talk about was the Puigest inning that was ever Puiged.
Oh, yes. He dropped the sure fly ball.
So he drops this, like, this easy pop-up, right? Drops it, but still makes the throw in the out at second.
Yes.
Because he has a phenomenal arm. But, like, and so everyone's just like, oh, God, it's Puig being Puig. And there is a very distinct line being drawn. And most of the people that I follow on Twitter who are sports writers, but I would say probably about 70%, which is, I think, higher than the rate in the general populace of sports writers, think that Puig is great. So most of the things that I saw is like, oh God, here we go. There's a Puig thing. There's totally a Puig thing. That's absolutely a Puig moment. Like, but he still made the throw. Great. And then other people going like, God, how can he drop such an easy catch? The next play.
And, you know, a lot of people will say, oh, you can't compare Puig to Willie Mays.
That's a fucking Willie Mays.
He channeled Willie Mays in that one play. You know, back towards home plate, basket catch in his glove. It was amazing.
It's gorgeous. I mean, it's like, I watched the GIF of it and the video, but the GIF first, like, oh God, so many times.
And then there was a play a couple innings later. It was a pop-up. Both Kemp, the center fielder Matt Kemp, and second baseman D. Gordon were converging. And all of a sudden, you see Yasiel Puig come into the frame, going full bore. And that would put the fear of God into anyone. Ask Andre Ethier.
Yes.
I have asked him before, and he says he had never felt the fear of God more than when he's seen Puig out of the corner of his eye rushing at him. But out he comes, rushing between the two, dives, and makes the catch. So you know what? You live with a Puig, you die with a Puig.
And I'm happy to do that, because he's just the most exciting person to watch.
It's entertaining, you know? I mean, let's not get away from the fact that the Dodgers, Friday night, against the Diamondbacks, whose pitching staff, I think, has a combined ERA of, like, 6. It's over 6, I know it, but I don't know how much over it is. They managed just, what, 2 runs in 12 innings or 13? I didn't watch the game, so I don't know how long it went.
12.
Okay. But 2 runs off of the shittiest team in baseball. Enough said. But that was my boy, Wade Miley, my country boy. He's from Louisiana. He'll fetch a gator, let me tell you.
Well, and I mean, you know, I think you and I have talked a little bit about, and I don't want to get too far into sports, but, like, just there's this story about that the Dodgers relief bullpen is great, and it's not. It's pretty bad, honestly.
It's meh. No, it's not bad.
Withrow is not good.
Well, after one inning, he's not good.
And the league is the worst.
But we'll not get to my feelings on league. That mouth breather. But
he's the worst.
Like, I know. I mean, it's not the worst. I mean, the Dodgers bullpen is not the worst.
It's not.
It's not the best.
It's not, but, like,
it's in the top. No, it really is towards the
really?
Top. Yes. Just, I go by ERA because it's an easy
yeah.
stat. They're not, they're sort of above average. They're not the best. They're not the worst. They're above average.
And
know,
we have good. and we have legitimately, like, 3 of the best starting pitchers in the game, and I think the best closer.
Yes. Even though he's been a little rocky lately. Kenley Jansen's been a little rocky. But
when he's on, he's so on. Oh, my God. 27 straight scoreless
scoreless innings. I really haven't been watching the Dodgers, to be honest.
Well, that was last year. So, I mean, like, and it's sort of unfair to compare the second half of the Dodgers season from last year to anything because it was a total quirk. I mean, it was a well-paid-for quirk, but it was still a quirk.
I heard this stat yesterday, before the game, the Dodger game yesterday. Mm-hmm. The Dodgers were 5-0 against Arizona, 5-6 against the rest of the league.
That's bad.
Let that simmer.
But also, I mean, like, one of the things that made the streak so impressive last year was that the first half of the season was a disaster. I mean, they were many games under 500? Like, it was ridiculous.
It was funny.
it was depressing, but it was like, but it was also like Ramirez
he was injured.
Yeah. Came back the same week that Puig got brought up from the minors.
It was the same day, I believe.
Was it the same day? God, I was at the game a couple, like, and it was the same week as the fight with San Diego, I believe. When Greinke got injured.
No, Greinke was before. That was...
Was it the Diamondbacks fight? It was the same week as one of the fights.
Yeah, the Diamondbacks fight, I think, was that week. Because the first...
It was right before... It was
the first
right
series was
up.
The Padres.
Yeah.
It was the first series of the home series. And I think the Diamondbacks was later. And again, Plaschke's story. When the brawl happened, Nancy B., the normal organist, wasn't there. So Dieter Ruhl from the Staples, from the Lakers and the Kings, filled in. During the fight, he played the Rocky theme song. Plaschke was livid. It was funny. I'm like, he's like, who is that guy? He's the organist for the Lakers and the Kings. You know, who also was invited to the Winter Olympics in hockey as the organist.
But, so, and I mean...
But anyhow.
And we've gotten really into baseball, but both you and I are big fans of the brawls. Like, those brawls were the best fights I've seen in baseball.
Because actual punches were thrown. And I learned, you don't fuck with J.P. Howell, you know?
Well,
he's a nice guy. I like talking to him. You don't cross him.
I also like that I learned two things. One, that Don Mattingly has a son. And that Don Mattingly's son has a Twitter account in which he tweeted, "Watching my dad clothesline the GM for the Diamondbacks gets me so hype." It's fucking amazing. Sorry.
Yeah, Preston is... He's a good kid. I liked him. Anyhow.
Sorry, so this has become a baseball podcast.
It has, so...
We should probably blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
So, we'll leave you with a song dedicated to Brendan's hair. This is a Pavement with Cut Your Hair. Bye.
Bye.
Stop it. Crazy, bands start up, each and
No big hair. Songs mean a lot when songs are bought and sold.